Hello and welcome to episode 6 of the Little Chapters podcast. I'm Kate and here's Jessica.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about clutter. And the reason we've gone for clutter is we were kind of talking about doing minimalism as a whole, but thought that would probably be like a 4-hour episode. So we're breaking minimalism into kind of chunks. And we're starting with clutter. And so, Jess, this is very much your arena.
Feels like it.
So you are the queen of clutter and all things minimalism. But for everybody who's seen your Instagram feed or your website as it is, what was it like before? This is what I love, the juicy bits of what was your clutter situation before you found minimalism.
That makes me cringe when you say that, before you found minimalism. It makes it sound like a cult. And I was going to, I feel weird about this episode. I was going to say, you need to promise you're not going to laugh at me, at my minimalism.
Well, I'm not going to laugh. I need all the help I can get.
Oh my gosh, it feels like such a giant subject for me. Like there are books written on it. There are TV shows. Have you been watching Marie Kondo's new TV show?
Obviously, I've Tidying not up. Been watching I don't watch things. No, I intend to, but that doesn't always mean a lot.
Okay. It's really, really good. I don't know if any of the listeners have been watching it. I binge watched it. Like once I started, I just couldn't stop. It's so, so good. And for anyone who has read Marie's book, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, which literally changed my life when I read it. It was the catalyst, is that the right word?
That is the right word.
Yeah, it was the catalyst that really changed my relationship with clutter. But when you read the book, you can't, well, I don't know about anyone else, but when I read someone's book, I get obsessed and I want to know everything about that person. And Marie's a funny one because she's not, as a personality, she's not really out there on the internet and she doesn't speak English, so there's a bit of a language barrier there as well. But in the show, oh my gosh, you feel like you really get to know her, and I've just fallen in love with her all over again. It's such a good show. You should definitely give it a watch. It's very therapeutic to watch as well. But going back to your question, my life was a mess, like a real mess. Like no one taught me what clutter was when I was growing up. No one taught me how to tidy properly, you know. It was just a case of shove things in here, and I was never taught to be mindful about the things that I had, let alone grateful for them, and, you know, treat things with respect, which is very much Marie's method. And that really comes across in her show as well, aside from the whole, you know, getting rid of things. What she really encourages people to do is be grateful and have a much more mindful relationship with the things that make up their life, basically, which is, oh, for me, just so beautiful. Yeah, my life was a total mess. I'm looking around the house now, and I didn't live here back then. We lived in our old house, which was a lot bigger. And the stuff that I had, there is no way that we would be able to live in this house now with all that stuff. Like I don't have a proper wardrobe as such now. We've got a cupboard, like a boiler cupboard that we've put a rail in to try and maximize, but it's mainly Jason's stuff. So I don't have a wardrobe as such. I have a rail and then kind of just a couple of drawers. Oh my gosh, years ago I had wardrobes, plural, probably like 3 wardrobes just full. I mean, rammed full of clothes. And then I had the whole suitcases that were full of clothes as well. You know, those that you think are kind of seasonal and you only ever get them out once a year and they've got that fusty smell because you just haven't even touched them at all. And then there was, you know, loads of furniture, loads of sentimental stuff. You name it, I had it. And I was very much a compulsive spender. So I was constantly accumulating more clutter all the time as well. I think I come from a family of hoarders, actually. My nan's terrible. I went last night and her house is just absolutely full of stuff. But that, you know, that's the way that she likes it. So yeah, I did the Marie Kondo method And I got rid of like 80% of my stuff, which I know sounds extreme, but I wish I'd done photos. Like, I didn't blog back then, but the conservatory at the time was, you know, almost to the ceiling full of bags of stuff. I think I did like two.
But you were getting
boots.
Rid of, not that was just how you existed.
No. That wasn't just in general. This was stuff that I was getting rid of. So I just went around the house and just did every single room, every single drawer, just decluttered the entire thing. And it's a very addictive process as well. And I think it's safe to say I have quite an addictive personality, and I did get hooked on it. And yeah, just pretty much got rid of most of the stuff that I owned. It was a real eye-opener. It made me realise how wrong everything had been and how very little of the things that I'd brought into my life brought me joy. And that's Marie Kondo's thing. The one question that she gets you to ask is when she gets you to pick up items individually and ask yourself, does it spark joy?
And that's what I was going to ask, is that when you were going around your house and filling up the conservatory, is that what you used to do that process?
Yeah, because I didn't have any other tools at the time. I was just hooked on Marie's book, and it worked. It got rid of loads and loads of stuff. I do things quite differently now. I kind of got my own methods, but I still live... I think compared to a lot of people, I live a pretty clutter-free life. I'm very mindful of the things that I let into the house, the things that I spend my money on, and I don't like too much stuff around me.
And so that not liking too much stuff around you, do you think that's always been there, but you ignored it?
Yeah, I had no idea the effect that it could have. So I hate cleaning. Like, I hate cleaning up. Always hated it. And it's not until you don't have as many things to clean that you realise how much easier your life can be.
Mm.
You know, with less stuff around me, I made all this space and I felt calmer. I felt more relaxed. And I felt happier. It's really weird. It was a really, really weird thing. And I started thinking, well, you know, mainstream society tells you that traditional forms of success are very much, oh, look at this I've got, look at this. I mean, you know, you're a historian, it goes back centuries, doesn't it?
I may have written a thesis about this.
This is how good I am. Look at all these things I've got. So naturally, I was very much in that kind of mindset. But it really made me question it. I was thinking, hang on a minute. I have, say, you know, 80% less stuff than I did before. How is it that I'm happier?
Mm.
And then that started my whole road into the minimalism thing and intentionality, mindfulness, and, you know, starting to really think about curating a life for myself. I think it was like 5 years ago when I read Marie's book.
So it all started with the decluttering.
Yeah, it all started with Marie. I owe Marie so much. How I talk about her, Marie.
You better.
My friend Marie.
So I didn't even realise that. So it's actually quite good that we're doing clutter first, because that was kind of your gateway drug into more minimalism.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's totally addictive. I mean, it's, you know, Marie's show, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, and we'll put a link in, but, you know, maybe people are watching anyway.
Yeah.
It's just sweeping across the world. Her book's back at number one on the charts, and there is a whole wave of decluttering going on. It's a very, very big thing in America specifically, I think, more so than here. But they have bigger houses in
America. That's what I was going to say. They have bigger houses, and I don't know where I'm getting this from, but I imagine they have a lot more inbuilt storage as well.
Oh, yeah, because they have, they call it a closet, don't they?
Yeah, when they have like lots of like built-in wardrobes and things like that, where you have to fill them up with something.
Yeah, well, that was the thing, you see, and this is something that very much hit home for me. I was just filling up spaces.
Mm.
You know, if you have a bigger space, you want to fill it. Live in with loads and loads of clutter was not a healthy thing for me personally. I've lived with loads of it and I've lived without it, and I know which one I prefer. But, you know, that's not always the case for everyone. And I think there can be a tendency where there's this holier than thou opinion where, you know, you shouldn't have clutter. That's wrong. That's the wrong way to be. And that is not necessarily the case. I think studies have shown that some people do benefit from having more stuff around mm-hmm. them. My view is that, you know, we're all individual. We're all very different. And what the amount of stuff that we need around us depends on that person. And I know now when I'm reaching my limit. It's something that I've tested quite a bit. So I know when things are getting a bit out of control clutter-wise for me, which probably wouldn't feel out of control for most people, but I know when I'm getting to that limit, and then I can sort of check myself with it. But I do think that we're all individual on that scale.
And that's just practice, finding out where you sit on the scale.
Yeah, I definitely think it's practice, because I got to a bit of a point where I was obsessed. And I think I got to the point where it got to be a bit of a deprivation thing, a bit of a sort of, you know, that scale that we were talking about. And they're very much holier than thou. This is what you should have. This is what you shouldn't have. And I what I really was chasing in the beginning was that perfect Pinterest lifestyle. And I just wanted to get to that. And that all came from a place of what you've got right now isn't good enough, which is slippery slope. And I think it's very, very easy actually to skew Marie Kondo's methods of decluttering and get to a very obsessive, get rid of everything kind of thing and forget the core message, which is, you know, appreciate, be thankful for, notice, and surround yourself with things that make you happy. It's not about owning the fewest items at all. Although she did get a bit of criticism recently. She said that, and I don't know if this was actually in the show, I can't remember it, and I usually have quite a good memory. She said something about books.
Yeah, it's like you should only have 30 books or something. That's it, yeah. And Twitter went, like, off.
Oh my gosh, journalists just went insanely crazy. Like, who is this woman? This is outrageous. And I don't think that's necessarily... I mean, what she says is to kind of have books that make you really, really happy. And the way that I interpret that personally is I only have books that I like to specifically refer to or that I think I'll read again. And then the books that I don't feel I'll read again, I usually pass on via Instagram stories randomly. It's how I normally do it. Or charity shop if they're really crap, because I'd never want to give... I'd never want to send crap books out to people. But no, I think that's a good example of people misinterpreting and thinking that it's a binary thing. And I really don't think it is. I think it's a method of hers to be interpreted in a very personal way. And by no means do I think clutter should ever be a stick to beat yourself with. You know, because I talk about minimalism quite a lot and clutter. If I go to someone's house, they'll say, oh my gosh, you're going to die when you see my house. You know, oh, it's a mess. It's just such a mess. Please don't look at it. And I think, I'm not actually that bothered.
I don't have to live here.
I really don't care how much clutter you've got. I'm just bothered about my own house, really. Like, I really couldn't care less. I would never judge anyone on how much clutter they've got. But I think the subject of clutter and the whole Marie Kondo thing, it very much conjures up all those feelings for people of, oh, I should have this, I should have that, as opposed to thinking about what they actually want. And no, what's your situation?
I want to ask you before we get on to me.
Pushing that spotlight back, aren't you?
Well, no, because I've been trying to get a word in edgeways, actually.
Want to edit me down.
But I think where you're talking about the possibility of going too far and using it as a stick to beat yourself with, I'm interested to know whether you have decluttered something that you wish you hadn't.
Ah, I was talking to Jason about this the other day because he got on the bandwagon, as he always does. But they do, don't they? Jason does anyway. He's always... If I'm into something, you can bet a few weeks later it's his new thing as well. But decluttering is very addictive. And, you know, a lot of people will ask me, how do I get my partner or my kids into it? And I say, always say, just do your own thing. Just focus on your own stuff and trust me, they'll follow. And they usually do. Because he was saying how he hasn't got rid of a single thing that he regrets.
Mm.
The one thing that I've said, and it's not that I've got rid of them, it's that it's photographs, basically. Mm. So I got, and it's difficult for me because I did the whole picking each photograph up and thinking, does this spark joy? And historically, haven't got the best relationship with myself in that I look at old pictures of myself and think, oh God, you know, oh, you look horrendous. What were you thinking? That kind of thing. So no, they didn't spark joy. So they went. They all went. And I scanned the very few that made me feel happy. And I wish I'd scanned more photos. I wish I'd gone easier on myself and scanned a few more. I mean, luckily, my mum's got loads and loads of photos and my nan and my sister. So it's fine. But things like old school trips and stuff that didn't necessarily bring up the best memories. I kind of, because I'm really nostalgic, so I really like to look back. And I don't wish that I'd got albums, you know, wall-to-wall albums of photos, but I wish I'd scanned more than I did.
Interesting. But again, but it's really interesting that that's a not one of those objects that defines status or anything like that, that it's quite a humble, very personal thing.
Yeah, I guess it is. But no, out of all the stuff, out of all the clothes, all the bits of furniture, my wedding dress, my wedding planner, that was a big deal to get. I mean, that thing I was obsessed with. No, I don't regret any of that. My wedding invitation, that went. But, you know, I've got photos of it. I've still got the albums. And that's a really good tip, actually, that if you, you know, things that you may be thinking I might regret, I always do like a temporary deprivation thing, which isn't a nice term, actually, but just sort of a trial without something. So I'll put it in a box for 6 months. And then if I haven't missed it, I'll think, oh, well, I clearly don't need it. But if it's sentimental stuff, it can be a really nice idea to make a photo album and take a picture of the thing. And then you can still remember it as it was without having the physical thing, because obviously photos are much easier to store. And I think people with kids find that a really good thing to do because kids have so much stuff, don't they? And there's a lot of memories attached to a lot of the things that they have. But no regrets. And that was really interesting because a lot of my initial fears were, well, what if I regret it? Whereas now, if I have that, I can base it on a bit more evidence. I can think, well, you didn't regret that wedding dress of yours that you sold, so you're probably not going to regret this. And it is very much just a process and a practice.
Interesting. Thank you for answering my question.
You're welcome. What's your situation like with clutter? How do you feel about it?
So it's funny because I don't have a lot of stuff.
I think, see, you laugh at my minimalism, but I think you're a secret minimalist. I think you're so much more minimalist than you think.
Yeah, well, because I know that you've spoken about, well, I've spoken to people who've done your course and you're saying about your three wardrobes and, like, that is insane to me.
I was addicted to shopping.
Yeah.
I was heavily addicted. Like, I got into, you know, I wouldn't think twice about getting into debt for a dress that I wanted. Wouldn't think twice about it. I had a crazy obsession with designer handbags. I'd think nothing of, you know, 500 quid on a handbag.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever spent more than...
I didn't even like the handbag, that's the point.
I've never spent more than probably £75 on anything.
Yeah, I think, is it Gretchen Rubin that has the underbuyer versus the overbuyer?
Oh, I don't know. Is that a Gretchen Rubin thing?
Yeah, there are two. She talks about it in her Four Tendencies book again. She talks about it in her Four Tendencies book, and there are two types of people. The underbuyers that, and you're definitely an underbuyer, I think, you have to really psych yourself up to buy something. Your initial reaction is always, no,
yeah,
I'm not
going
to buy it.
I can talk myself out of everything I ever want to buy, yeah.
Yeah, whereas I have to forcibly talk myself out of stuff because my first reaction is I want it and I want it now and I'm gonna have it.
I'm very much not, I don't need that, I'm not gonna have it. So clothes wise I've got half a wardrobe and a couple of drawers and a chair.
that's very decluttered. But do you think that comes from a place of not thinking that you deserve a really nice wardrobe?
I've never liked clothes particularly.
Oh, see, I love clothes. I mean, I love clothes. Minimalism aside, I have never lost my love for clothes. Yeah. I've always loved clothes.
Even as a kid, like, British listeners may remember Tammy Girl, which is where you used to get, when you were under 13, you'd get clothes from. And in the 90s, everything had glitter on.
It was the place to be.
Everything had glitter on, and I was, like, so against glitter. Like, that was my one thing. It was, like, I did not want to have glitter anywhere near me. I didn't want to have anything that was too girly. I didn't, like, diamantes, like, none of that. Didn't want any of that. But then as I grew older, I've got quite a weird shape.
Do you know what your body shape is?
No.
Oh, we need to do
it. It's kind of changed, but I've got a really large bust, which is very difficult to dress. So I've shopping and clothes has never been a joyful experience for me. It's always, I can't wear that, I can't wear that, can't wear this, can't wear that. And so I've always just kind of, it's very functional rather than a thing that I love to buy. But the stuff that I then do like to buy is things.
Yeah, because I think everyone has a thing. Yeah. Everyone has their weaknesses. So what's yours?
It's things like blankets and cups and pots and
interior
pretty books
stuff.
And yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's going into wardrobe stuff now, but it can be less emotional to dress your house than it can yourself.
Mm.
Because your house never changes. It doesn't have those days where your period's about to arrive and you feel like a giant blob. It always looks the same. So, yeah, I think that's quite common.
Yeah, it's more like, that's where I think that kind of all pretty things is about that rather than going into... Also, I've got size 8 feet, so shoes were never my thing. Because I just look like a clown and everything. So I've never... That's never been that, but it's things like... the stuff around me that I'm like, oh, I'll have that. But also, I don't do that a lot. I can talk myself out of that all the time as well.
You talk yourself out of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
As the minimalist one, I feel like I'm constantly talking you into buying things.
Yeah, you definitely are. I'm like, I don't deserve to spend money on that.
I do this morning about books. It's like, I can't remember which book it was you were thinking. You're like, I don't know whether to get the audiobook or the real book. And I said, get both.
And I was just like...
books are never a waste of money.
Like there's like an America's Next Top Model gif of the guy who's the judge on that looking really shocked. That was like my reaction. Like, two of the same?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think this is where the whole clutter thing can get to, where it gets too extreme and it gets to a bit of a deprivation kind of thing, and it gets to the point where stuff is bad, whereas I genuinely don't believe that. I think it's about surrounding yourself with the right things as opposed to just things in general. And I stand by, books are never a waste of money. I don't think that you can have too many books as such, as long as you're reading them.
Yeah, I think that's the trouble, that I've got piles and piles of books.
Oh, see, that's no good.
That I haven't picked up.
Yeah.
And that's where I have a kind of, I said to you a few weeks ago that I had like a pile of stuff still from Christmas, like presents, in the middle of our living room floor, because I didn't know what to do with it. And a lot of that pile was a bag of books that I'd been given, and I didn't want to put them away on the bookshelf because that almost was a signal that I wasn't ever going to pick them up again.
Oh no.
And so it's like I need things out so I can deal with them, because putting it away feels like putting it away forever.
I mean I have that similarly. I really like things out. I mean, the way our house is, it doesn't really have any storage anyway, but I'm very much have things out as opposed to everything, which is probably more of a minimalist aesthetic, actually, is to have everything, you know, very, very clean lines and where you can't see anything. How do you feel about the difference between like physical clutter versus mental clutter?
Well, mental clutter hadn't even occurred to me as a thing.
Okay.
Because I like physical clutter is very much, well, it's obviously the more visible thing that when I'm stepping over a pile of stuff every day,
yeah,
that has more of an impact on my life. And I think that there are lots of things that I would want to declutter. And I mean, I'm looking around me at my desk now, and the majority of the stuff I'm looking at, I don't really want.
Oh, that's interesting. So how does that make you feel?
Oh, like tired.
Yeah, that's it. No, that's the feeling. Like, it's, I find stuff very overwhelming if it's stuff that I just don't want around me.
Oh, but for me, it's like the idea of having to deal with it. Oh, I don't want to have to deal with that. I'll just leave it there. And also, you know that I overthink a lot of things. For listeners who listened to the, I think it was the What Do You Want episode where we talked about the inner mental, I did the inner mental visualization, but
oh,
like,
we need an update on this.
But I was talking to myself the whole way through, like, oh no, she wouldn't look like that. You'd never grow your hair out. No, that's wrong. Like, just like a little director's commentary in the corner. Where,
oh, no.
I really overthink things. So things like asking, does this spark joy? I'm like, I don't know. Does it? What is joy?
I think the documentary would really help, because Marie shows you. She does this really cute little thing. It's like she picks something up and she'll say, when I feel joy, I get this. And she does this little noise like, and it's so cute. And you think, and then what she encourages you to do is pick up things that, you know, are a definite yes for you to keep, like your favorite things, and then you use that as a you know, as like a marker, so then you can start owning your skill of determining what does spark joy and what doesn't. And I know when I was right at the beginning of my decluttering awakening, I had no idea. That's why I gave away so much stuff. Clearly, I had no idea, because all the stuff that was surrounding me, I didn't even like.
That's interesting. Yeah, so maybe that I need to watch the documentary is probably the conclusion of this episode. But yeah, like, I'm just like, does this spark joy? What is joy? What do I even like? Do I like any of this stuff? Do I just need to burn it all to the ground?
That's the situation I found myself in.
But I think as well, another thing with my physical stuff, because I do have drawers that I don't open, which have got all
don't
sorts
open
of
at
weird.
All.
Yeah, no, unless I put more stuff into them, I don't ever go through them. But they have got, that's like very much from my dad, because he grew up in that kind of not having a lot and everything needed to be kept, because what if it comes in useful? I have that a lot, like, oh, what if I need this box that my phone came in one day? What if I need this lead that doesn't even work? Yeah, I have a lot of that as well. If I go around here and I think, oh, I could get rid of that, I'm like, oh, but one day that could come in useful.
I very much grew up with that mentality as well. And I think the way that I've overcome that is by putting some concrete boundaries in place. And the one that I use is, if I haven't used it in the last 12 months and I can't see myself using it in the next 12 months, it's not serving me in any way. I don't know, I think past predicts future. If you haven't used something, you're not going to use it. And then the whole argument comes up of, well, what, you know, it's the sunken cost of something. So the money's already been spent, and then what's more valuable? Is it the clutter-free space that is potentially going to be more inspiring for you, make you happier, make you calmer? Or is it just having that thing just in case? Because the security that you think you've got by having that thing, it can be really false, and it can there's a bit of trickery going on, because you'd actually benefit more from not having the thing, from having more space around you. And then should you need that thing, you can buy it again. And that's usually more beneficial. But I do get the whole waste side of it. Like, I watch documentary, obviously, and it shows you everything that's being gotten rid of. And I think there's a danger of glorifying how much, look how much I've decluttered. And the more I've sort of started reading about waste and consumerism, the more you think that's not good for the environment. Aww. And then you start thinking about the whole of America starting to get rid of that much stuff. That's not good for the environment. The answer is always going to be don't buy much stuff in the first place. But yeah, that whole feeling of I'm being wasteful, that almost has a new meaning now, because where it used to be for the likes of my mum, my grandparents, your dad, where, you know, we haven't got much, we might need it, and then we haven't got the means to get it again. Now it's a case of, well, this is going to have a really bad impact on the environment. There was a piece, again, off the back of the Marie Kondo documentary about charity shops and how they are literally just being inundated at the minute. Like, they can't cope with the amount of stuff that they're having. So it's not as... So I don't know, it's a weird thing. It's not as good versus bad as we think.
And that's a big thing for me is, where am I even going to put this stuff? Like, where am I going to take it? Is it better sitting in the corner of my drawer than me driving however far to dispose of it, and then it's just going to end up in landfill or whatever, you know? Like, it's where to take it. Where yeah. If not here, where?
I mean, repurposing things is always the best thing that you can do. So if you can find another use for something, or if you can recycle it. I mean, a lot of stuff can be recycled. If you take it to the local recycling centre, I'm there all the time. They know me. They help you sort things out into the different skips and stuff. I think that's the best thing that you can do. Or there are the clothing banks where you can take that. And people are doing great things with recycled clothes at the minute. There's all sorts of stuff going on. But I don't think sitting with it is always the best answer, unless clutter brings you joy, which it does for some people, and that's totally fine.
So let's talk about the mental clutter then.
That's a whole other issue, isn't it?
Yeah. So what do you mean by that?
I would class mental clutter as stuff like drama that you allow into your life, things like commitments, like a schedule, things that you're worrying about, things that you are taking on emotionally that you could do without. I'm starting to think about the book Counter Marie Kondo, about the life-changing magic of not giving a fuck.
Oh yeah, I've seen that one.
Yeah, it's super sweary. But Jason's just listened to the audiobook and he's like obsessed with it. He's like, these are all the things I no longer care about. Okay. Yeah, I would class that as mental clutter, because I think that can, our brains, gosh, it's so easy to take up the space in there, isn't it? And then the more, like with physical clutter, the more space is taken up, the less, for me, the less I find I can really breathe and think and live calmly and happily, which is what I really crave.
So what is some of the mental clutter that you've decluttered?
Well, we talked last week, didn't we, about comparison?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about things like Instagram accounts that make me feel bad, that are triggering.
Oh, so mental clutter has an external, more physical...
Yeah, I think it can, because it can be people as well, you know? It can be, like I said, about drama. It could be, I don't know, we all get involved in things like gossip, don't we? Or... scandals, and you want to know everything about them, and then you start talking about them. Things like that, negative kind of things that don't do you any good, but that provide a really good distraction from the things that would be making you a lot happier. Worries and things. I mean, I always forget that I have a choice about the things that I can worry about.
Oh, yeah. This is quite... new to me, because it was literally last night you're like, oh yeah, I'm mental clutter, and I was like, wait, what? This is a thing? And it made so much sense, because probably the of all the clutter in my life, it's mostly in my brain.
Oh.
I'm a very natural prone to worrier. Like, for example, when we were in Bruges, we had to get the train to Brussels to get the Eurostar, and I worried that we were on the wrong platform. I worried that we were on the wrong train. Even though we'd had our tickets checked, I was like, oh, this might not be the right train that goes to the right station for the Eurostar. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, right, so wherever we get off, we're going to have to work out how we get to the underground, to the right station, and we've only got an hour, and blah, 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 and like, there's always something else to worry about that very quickly unravels.
And takes up so much space in your brain.
Yeah.
And causes the opposite of a decluttered effect.
Yeah, and it's like there has to be something. Like you said about your clothes, that there's space there and I have to find something to fill it. So even if it's the evening and I'm like, right, now is the time that I'm going to rest and relax, and there's something else comes in of something to fill that space. Mm-hmm. And something that I'm wrestling with a little bit at the moment is trying to define work and life and what work is, because it's kind of like, if I'm listening to a podcast, is that work or is that relaxing? But actually, if I am listening to a podcast or I'm reading something, even though it's probably a grey area on the work side, it actually does give me something else to think about than my brain being like, hey, worry about this. Hey, remember this thing 18 months ago that you watched on the telly? So that's something that I'm sort of wrestling with, is how to quieten the noise. But I don't think that's even really decluttering. That's throwing a sheet over it, essentially, isn't it? Throwing a sheet over the mess.
I mean, have you ever tried to be truly like alone with yourself?
How are you defining that?
In silence, just you. It's the most terrifying thing I've ever tried. Like, no no phone, no telly, no nothing, no book, no anything. Just to try and be truly alone. The stuff that comes up in your head, it's insane.
Does going to bed count?
No.
Oh.
Well, yeah, that's a perfect example. Like, a lot of people get into bed and their brain wakes up.
Yeah, this is my
real issue. With all these worries, all these things that they're worried about. And I just think if you can try and tick the, you know, like Sarah Knight says in her not giving a, I hate saying the F word on the podcast. I feel like it lowers the tone. You know, those things. If you can kind of tick certain things off that you no longer want them to take up space in your brain, I think that can have a fantastic effect mentally. I think that mental clutter deserves a lot of thought as well as the physical. But I think tackling the physical first is much easier.
So you just tell yourself, don't think about this anymore.
No, but I have I have quite a strict list of priorities. And if it's not on the priority list and I find myself worrying about it, I do check myself and think, do you know what? This isn't important to you. You don't have to be worrying about this. You can actually put this in a bubble and send it off down the fields.
Mm.
I think we forget that we have a choice, and we think that all these things are just cropping up in our brain and they all come to us and we have to deal with them. Whereas, you know, we do have an invisible baseball bat that we can hit them off with and say, I'm not going to worry about this. It's okay.
This is what I've started doing at night, is that, and it only works after like 2 hours where I actually am, I have to get to the right point, but I do deep breathing, and then I visualize the words don't think, but like with every inhale they're like being inflated and they push everything else out of my head, and that's my visualization. And I say don't think with it.
That's kind of a decluttering thing.
That's how I eventually get to sleep at like 2:30 in the morning. But I haven't tried doing it during the day, and I think doing it at night also, you always have a bit of desperation to it where you're like, I need to sleep, like, and then you start overthinking about that. And so I think it'd be interesting to do that same exercise when there's not that pressure of...
I think it comes down to remembering that you have a choice whether or not you engage with negativity. because I just think negativity is, I mean, look, there are things that negative that happen in life that you can't avoid and you have to deal with them, yes, but there's also a lot of crap that we get involved with that we don't need to be involved with. It's just clutter. It's just mental clutter in our brains that we can ease off.
This is what I'm going to try now, I've decided, is to say this is clutter and actually maybe imagining myself in my head picking up the thought and taking it out. And actually that might be something that I would find useful, is to call it clutter.
Yeah.
Which I don't think I have before. I gave it too much prominence and importance, and that this is, because a lot of what I do when I go to bed is like act out the following day or something that I've got coming up, where I go through like everything I'm going to say on that call and what I'm going to put into that workshop, and actually like yes, it's important, but it's not important for right then and that moment. It's clutter, not something important.
Yeah, I know you haven't started the headspace yet.
No, of course I haven't.
I keep telling you to do this, but that's really, really helpful for quietening the clutter. But that it's done in a really weird way, because it's done in a way of sort of observing it from afar, which I know sounds a bit crazy to anyone who doesn't do the Headspace app, so I'll leave it there.
No, but I think I can kind of get it. That's what I was doing with my inner mentor, as I was like watching it, like giving it a commentary rather than actually being in it.
Yeah.
So we should probably wrap this up before you get out of control talking about clutter.
No, I think we maybe need a clutter series.
So what are your kind of, we don't usually do massive takeaways on this, but I think given that this is something that people might want to really take away and put into action, what are three concise things that you can tell people to go and do?
Oh gosh, only three.
Well, just less than 10.
Yeah, and wrap it up. It's like when someone's giving an Oscar speech and the music comes on.
I might start humming in the background.
Get you off the stage. Okay, I mean, the first thing I think you've got to do is motivate yourself to do it. I think that bit is grossly underestimated. So a good way to do that, if people are struggling to get started, is to really break it down and motivate yourself with something like Marie's documentary or Marie's book or Pinterest, whatever, you know, whatever floats your boat, basically. And then I think as part of that, scheduling time to do it is also really important. I like to set, if I'm doing a big declutter, I like to set aside at least an afternoon, ideally. Because if you're rushing it, it's just never going to happen. I think three things, oh my gosh, I'm on the third already. I think dividing things up into categories can really help. So again, you know, on the whole break it down thing, if you are really struggling, just start with whatever's easy, for sure. Just start with whatever's easiest. But so say you're going to do that drawer in the kitchen that is overflowing with stuff, but it's not too big, so you feel like it's manageable. In that case, start with that drawer, set aside an hour to do it, put some nice music on, make yourself a cup of tea, try and make it enjoyable, and then get everything out. I think that's really important, because often, I don't know, it's the easiest thing, isn't it, to sort of just go around the house picking at bits and bobs and not really ever coming face to face with the stuff. So I think if you can get everything out, you have to come face to face with it. And then you can go through each item individually. And you could, you know, to keep things really simple, you can do the does it spark joy. I go a little bit beyond that and I ask stuff, like I said earlier, when did I last use it? Can I see myself using it again? Have I got lots of things that are like this? Like, I used to be really bad for having duplicate stuff. I don't really do that anymore. And then, you know, is this actually adding value? Does it have a purpose? Or is it just a bit of a hindrance and it's getting on my nerves? And then, you know, sort things into piles. So I usually do a keep pile, a recycle, or get rid of pile, the temporary trial without, which I talked about earlier. And then sometimes things just need to be relocated, so they'll go into a different pile. And then that's it. That's your decluttering done. I think it's really good if you're not sure about getting rid of stuff, to do the temporary trial without. Make sure whatever is in that pile, maybe put it into a box, but put it out of sight somewhere, like in an attic or a garage, literally nowhere to be seen. And then set yourself a deadline of, say, don't know, like 6 months, maybe even a year. And if you've not looked in the box in that time, then I think you've got your answer. You know, it's not been doing you any good whatsoever. But opening the box again is never a good idea because all the emotions just come rushing back. So just try and get rid of that or get someone else to do the recycling of it for you. That was not three tips. That was a whole spiel.
Yeah, it probably was actually like 10, but yeah, okay, whatever.
Nice. I'm done.
Zippy wrap up for you there, everybody. Okay, so let's take another trip to the post box.
Oh, the post box.
See what's in there today. So we've had an email from Harriet, and this was in response to episode 1, which was about expectations. And she's asked, how do you manage the expectations you have for others in a professional, friendly, or loving capacity? I often struggle with disappointment over how I think people should act or what they say. I'm always having to check myself and say this is just your expectation rather than what they have committed to do. For example, at work I feel passionate about what I do and put into my job, but feel frustrated with how others sometimes don't feel the same way.
I can relate to that, you know, yeah, quite a lot. Like I have high expectations of myself, and they often translate into high expectations of other people as well. And it, look, that feeds into what we talk about quite a lot, about how it's always about you and not someone else. Like it works both ways. When people are saying things to you, it's about them and not you. And likewise, when you're projecting things, it's always about you and not the other person. So I think it's a case of recognizing that it is more about you. And I think it would feel much easier to lower those expectations a little bit. And I would try and not expect perfection, both from yourself and from others, because you're going to be disappointed. People aren't perfect. We're all flawed. All of us. And that's part of being alive. It's quite disappointing, isn't it, when people don't meet your expectations?
Yeah, I think that obviously you, Harriet, have got a very high bar for yourself, and that's something that I definitely have, a very high bar for myself. And
me too. Too high.
But I'm trying to think of an example, because you mentioned it being about in the workplace and feeling very passionate versus other people who are just kind of showing up. And I think that, well, with everything in life, we can only control ourselves and how we react to things. We can't control others. We can't control anything else. So we need to double down on that. And if somebody else isn't kind of pulling their weight in the way that you'd want them to, or quite feeling it as much, you just need to double down on your own passion and do what you need to do to feel like you're expressing that in the same way, regardless of that person. So I'm trying to think, when I was in jobs and there were people not doing what I would want them to do, I just start my own kind of project and put my energy into that and let them get on with their job, and they can clock in and out. But this is something that I wanted to do. I wanted to make it better. I wanted to raise the bar. So I would come up with a project in which I could do that. But also about kind of inspiring people. That was something that I did in a previous job, was about trying to inspire people to engage more with their jobs, and by kind of explaining how things worked and how things could be better and how things could be easier for them. So I think with a lot of ways, if that's what you want to do, it's finding what is that person passionate about, because they're obviously just not motivated or driven in the same way that you are. So you've got to find that and use that and speak their language rather than trying to speak your language to them. But other than that, it's really that acceptance of other people. And I think in the kind of relationship way, you can always look at other people's relationships and be like, oh, it's so nice that they do that together. We'd never be able to do that together. But actually accept that this is the person, and for good and for bad, and that the goods outweigh the bad, and that this is what we do have, and to try and look for the positive things.
I don't know about you, Kate, but one thing that I tend to do and something that I'm becoming very aware of is that I tend to give too much of myself to others and take on too much responsibility for others. And then I end up giving so much that I feel let down because I almost feel bitter for not getting back what I feel I should. Mm. I wonder if maybe, Harriet, that you maybe have a tendency to do that as well. I'm not sure. I'm just, yeah, reading the bit about being frustrated on how others, you know, they don't feel the same way, especially in the, you know, the professional and loving capacity as well. First and foremost, you've always got to take care of yourself. Like, if you're feeling disappointed about others, I just wonder if you're maybe opening up a little bit too much. You're sort of leaving yourself quite vulnerable, whereas I think first and foremost, take care of yourself.
But also, are you communicating what you want?
Yeah, I'd like some examples.
Like, are these expectations a secret? Because nobody's going to meet your expectations if you don't tell them what they are. Like, if your boss has a set of KPIs or goals for you but doesn't tell you, how on earth are you ever going to hit them?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking about this more like in my relationship. Like, I'm into cards. I like to get a Christmas card and a birthday card.
I thought you meant a deck of cards.
Yeah, I like playing cards. No, I like to receive cards.
I hate cards. Dad,
yeah, I know you do, you minimal so-and-so. But
hate cards. Oh gosh, the glittery ones are the worst.
No, I don't like glittery ones. But like, so we've spoken about your love languages, so the five love languages. Mine is words of affirmation.
We should link to that.
Yeah.
It's a really good one to do.
So for me,
the whole episode in itself.
Definitely. For me, it's words. So that's where the cards come in. I like people to write nice things about me and give it to me. So yeah, so but we had to have a conversation about that because he didn't know that I expect a card on my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And now he does know, and now he does get me a card on my birthday, and that's not an issue anymore. So it's, are you communicating what you want, what you expect from people?
And what you need as well.
Yeah.
I'd love some examples.
Yes.
But that's all we've got from mm-hmm. Harriet. So I hope that helps.
Yes. Kind of petered off at the end there. But I think, yeah, it's a bit of acceptance, a bit of asking for what you want, and worry about what you can control as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the lower your expectations are, the less disappointed you're going to be. It's one of the reasons my mum is always very worst case scenario. Mm. She'll say, if I expect the worst case, then I can't be disappointed.
Mm.
And I don't think that's the ideal. But, you know, Harriet, if you're the opposite and you've always got really high expectations, I think you tend to find that life can be quite disappointing and other people will disappoint you. So if maybe you can try and lower those, I think that will feel quite relieving for you, I would hope.
Yeah, I agree. Good luck, Harriet.
Good luck, Harriet.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Little Chapters. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode and found it inspirational and perhaps a little bit galvanizing too. If you have a friend who you think would really benefit from this conversation, please do send them the link to the episode.
Yeah, we want to reach as many people as possible and hopefully build up a bit of a community around the podcast as well. So if you can think of anyone who might benefit from this episode, please, please share it with them. And if you could leave us a review and a rating in iTunes as well, that will help to boost us and help other people find us.
Thank you so much, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.